You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Episode 12 of That One Time on Tour is brought to you by the band Ruth Crest. Ruth Crest is a five-piece pop-punk band from Los Angeles, California. The band recently released a new single titled By Your Side on Spotify, Apple Music, and all other streaming platforms. They released a music video for said song on their YouTube channel as well. They've got some shows coming up June 30th at the Foundation Room in Anaheim, July 7th at the White Oaks Music Hall, and August 9th at Emo Night in Pomona, California, The Flyaway at the Fox Theater. They're a really, really great band. I'm glad they came on as a sponsor. I'm digging their stuff a lot. If you want to check them out on social media, you can go to, just go to their website, www.ruthcrest.com. That's R-U-T-H-C-R-E-S-T. Facebook.com/Ruth Crest. Instagram, Ruth Crest. And Twitter, Ruth Crest. It's the same thing on everything. Ruth Crest, R-U-T-H-C-R-E-S-T. They're a really cool band. They just put out a new EP recently called Preseason. And By Your Side is actually on that EP. You can get it on iTunes. I'm sure you can get it other places as well. But, you know, go to iTunes. That's the place to go. So I'm going to play their song, By Your Side, right now. I hope you guys enjoy it. Here it is, Ruth Crest with By Your Side.
From Patent Pending, and we're listening to That One Time on Tour with Chris Swinney.
Mindful of the road, this is going on and on. We'll be driving through the darkest night until the break of dawn. And we'll be heading for the cities, another show for us to play. To get back in the bed tomorrow, we'll do it, we'll do it.
Hello, welcome back. As always, I'm your host, Chris Swinney. This is That One Time on Tour. You're back. Another week has gone, and we're back with a new episode. Thank you so much for checking out last week's episode at my annual rock and roll summer camp. It's near and dear to my heart, so I hope you guys enjoyed that. It was a pretty big episode. I didn't think it was going to be because we didn't really have a quote unquote rock star guest or whatever. But it was a lot of fun talking to the kids, and we had an awesome concert on Saturday. A few hundred people were there. The kids did a really, really good job. And I've got another one coming up in August, so maybe we'll do another episode from the Rock and Roll Summer Camp, the autumn edition, coming up in August and September. So, this thing, like as always, I tell you guys every week, it's a lot of fun to do. Once again, it is super late. It's almost 2 o'clock in the morning, and my dog is behind me, my dog Lucy, and she is snoring. And this is when I get to do this because I just got my son to sleep a couple hours ago and I've been editing and doing all this stuff. So I'm going to tell you about my guest this week. My guest is Mr. Rob Felicetti. Rob plays in the band Patent Pending. He was in the band Pull the Pin that the Ataris toured with back in the day. He actually played in the Ataris. There was an infamous moment where he actually had drums thrown at him on stage. We talk a little bit about that. It's all water under the bridge now, though. You know, don't look for any kind of a scoop or anything. Like, there's no bad blood. Everybody's cool. But this was a really cool episode. I hadn't talked to Rob for a very long time, and we talked about all kinds of things and about touring together. And, you know, Patent Pending's done all kinds of crazy stuff. They tour in the UK. They did a bunch of tours with Bowling for Soup. Rob actually played with Bowling for Soup for a while. What else? They won a Billboard Music Award. They got to play on the award show in front of like 8 million people. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in this. It's a very dense episode. So I hope that you guys enjoy it. I want to get some business out of the way before we get to my conversation with Rob. We had a new sponsor at the beginning of the show, Ruth Crest. They are from Los Angeles, California. Great band. Make sure that you pick up their new EP Pre-Season. It's on iTunes, it's on all the streaming things, Apple Music, Spotify, all that stuff. So check out Ruth Crest. They're really, really good. And if you want to become a sponsor, hit me up, TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll figure everything else out, and you can become a sponsor. I've got a really good sponsor for next week's episode, but I'm not going to tell you about that until that episode comes out. So, that's it. Just check us out on all the social medias. It's TOTOT platform. I can't even talk. That's why it's so late, and I'm very, very tired. TOTOT podcast and all the social media platforms. As I said before, you can email me TOTOTpodcast@gmail.com. You can tell me if you want me to have like a special guest or whatever. You want to ask me questions, whatever you want. Check us out there. iTunes. I cannot stress this enough. Please leave us a review. Even if it's a bad review, just leave us a review. Subscribe to us on iTunes, but you can also listen to us on SoundCloud at TOTOT podcast. So without further ado, I'm going to get into my episode with Mr. Rob Felicetti of Patent Pending, and he used to play in the Ataris, and a bunch of other stuff too. So here it is, my conversation with Rob. Let's go. Hey Rob, what's going on, man? This is Chris. I haven't talked to you in a long time, buddy.
Chris Swinney, what's up, bud? It's been I honestly think it's been years.
It's been years, but I mean, you know, once in a while on the internet, like I'll like your stuff or you'll like my stuff. So, I mean, we're never that far away, I guess, but it's been a long time since we've actually chatted about things.
And that's real life now.
That's real life now. Now there has to be a reason to actually have a chat. Like we're actually going to put it up on the internet for people to check out. Right.
Oh yeah.
It's the same way with Gavin, which, you know, you're friendly with Gavin. You knew Gavin before I knew Gavin. When he was on the podcast, it was like, why haven't we just been hanging out and talking anyway? Like, why do we have to record it for the internet?
Well, where are you now? Are you back? Are you in Indiana? Or last I knew you were in like an island. I don't even know anymore.
Okay. So, I moved from Indiana about 6 or 7 years ago to Gulf Shores, Alabama for a job. And, I was working for the Hangout Music Festival down there, on the beach. A lot of people don't even know that Alabama has a beach. It's about only like 2 or 3 miles, but there is a beach there.
It's a little nub.
Yeah, and then I played music for a while after that with a couple bands down there, and then moved to Jamaica to work for Margaritaville in their entertainment department. And then we moved from Jamaica back to Indiana. So I've been all over the place. But yeah, I'm back in Muncie, Indiana. You guys remember that. You guys played
good old
in Muncie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And then your buddy had that record shop.
Yeah, yeah. Village Green, Village Green Records on Ball State campus. Yeah.
Yes. Oh yeah, Ball State. Yes, that's the one. For all this now.
So let's get a little bit of backstory before we jump into the stuff that you and I have kind of shared, and then some of the other stuff. But what got you into music, man? Like back in the day, what was the first kind of, you know, with me? I went and saw Metallica when I was like 11 years old, and I wasn't even that into him, honestly, but my dad's like, hey, let's go to a concert. And I went, and it changed my life. And then from there I found the Misfits and NOFX and like all the stuff that I loved. What was your kind of the synthesis for everything that came after that?
Well, it's like, it's really bizarre because, the first concert I ever saw, I was like 8, and it was Eric Clapton at Madison Square Garden. That's a great introduction to live music, I'd say.
Great first concert, though, man. I mean, I know the guitarist for my first band, his first concert was New Kids on the Block. So you've got him beat.
Yeah, well, debatable.
Debatable.
Well, yeah, but it was. I mean, so I grew up kind of like around music. Like my dad did like the bar band thing and stuff. So like I'd be around that as a kid, and it always seemed kind of neat. There's always like guitars in the house and shit like that, and. I remember going to see that concert. I didn't know, like, I was 8 years old. I didn't know, like, what a concert was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, the first band is on. I'm like, that's not Eric Clapton. So my mom explained to me, like, what an opening band is.
my dad did the same thing because, like, when he's like, hey, let's go see Metallica, I was like, so the guys that are on my tape are going to play the songs? Like, I did.
We're just grasp your mind around it.
We're going to stand and watch? Like, I just didn't understand it when I was that age.
Oh, you know? And it just like it's weird because what's unfortunate, really think about it, that dude, whoever the opener was for that concert, this guy was touring with Eric Clapton, like doing the biggest thing you can do. He's touring stadiums and arenas, yeah. World with Eric Clapton, and I don't remember who it was.
You know, we should get on the internet and check that out, try to find out.
I'm sure we could find it like during this call, but you know what?
Because do you know what year that was? You're a bit younger than I am.
It was the Pilgrim tour. So whenever he was supporting that album.
Well, maybe I'll figure it out and put it in the show notes so people can go check
that
out.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so like, so that was my first like concert, and I was like I said, I was around just like guitars and stuff in my house and everything. And then when I was like 13 or something like that, and you know my brother Ted.
Yeah.
So him and my buddy Ian, who like lived up the street, we like ride bikes with each other and stuff. They were like, we're going to start a band. And we're like, all right. Like, we didn't know what we were doing. But my brother's like, I have a crappy, like, you know, Squire Strat. And Ian's like, I bought, like, some dumb, like, red Ibanez bass. And my buddy's brother was selling this old, like, awesome, actually, and I think about it. But at the time, it was a kid. So it was this dumb, like, gold sparkle Ludwig kit, like a 70s Ludwig kit. And I bought that from him. It was all, like, rigged up and shit. And we just started playing, like, whatever. Like, literally anything. And I grew up only listening to, like, the Beatles until I was, like, 10.
Okay.
And I discovered like Dude Ranch then from Blink-182, which I'm still a sucker for that band and that album and everything.
I mean, so, dude, people talk shit, but I love Blink. I've always loved Blink.
Of course. You know, people that talk shit, you're like, you're going to get a song stuck in your head regardless. You know what I mean? And there's something about that. So like, yeah, three of us like, kind of started this terrible band and like played along and stuff and did the whole thing. And I remember we saw Lit at Tink's in Scranton. There's this old club in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And that was like my first show.
So like not know? Like major like arena, but like a show.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that was the first time I'm going to like a club to see a rock show, and it was lit. And it was awesome. I was like, oh my God, like it sounds just like their album, and this is such a great like thing, and it was really cool. And after that we used to go see that's like what got us into music. And then that's like led us into listening to like punk rock stuff. Like I said, was you know, NOFX is still my favorite band.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and just Bad Religion and Pennywise and all that stuff.
Can we do like a tangent and we'll come back to this now?
Yeah.
I kind of want to tell my thoughts on this as well, maybe, but I wanted to get your thoughts on what kind of just happened with NOFX.
Yeah.
Like we don't have to go too deep, but I do want to know because you're my friend and I kind of feel a certain way. Now, you know, if the listeners out there don't know, they said some kind of off color remarks at a show in Vegas about the shooting victims. And now they've kind of been blackballed. Like, I don't know if you follow them on social media, but
I thought no promoter in the U.S. is booking them.
All of their shows are canceled. They're blackballed pretty much everywhere. I mean, they're in Europe right now doing the Punk and Drublick Festival.
They're mostly blackballed in America from what I saw. Like Canada and Mexico and Europe is still like taking them in.
So, I mean, you know, you're like I have. You've met those guys.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I spent a lot of time with Fat Mike. He's just, you know,
I've met those guys many times. I've played shows with them. Like, they're great people. Like, to me, they always have been. I know there's kind of this front where, like, the punk rock bullshit, whatever.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how do you feel about what's happening? You don't even have to comment on what they said, but how do you feel about the backlash?
I get it. Yeah, well, so, I mean, to be completely, like, the way I feel about it is nothing that hasn't been said by a million people already. So I don't think I have a unique stance on how I feel about it. It's black and white. What he said was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But at the same time, what they always say is ridiculous. Oh,
yeah, I was going to say, don't you feel like maybe with certain people in entertainment or in, like, you know, out there in the public world, sometimes you take it with a grain of salt because, like, what have they normally said about other things? I mean, it's Fat Mike. I mean, get
right.
I feel kind of like it was horrible what he said. You know,
right.
I never want to be on that side of thinking, even because I don't think he really thought that. He was just being punk rock and stupid.
Yes.
But I mean, it's Fat Mike. Like, get the fuck over it. That's how I feel.
How I really like is the way I kind of registered it was NoFX is a band that didn't do their maturing as a band, if they did mature.
Yeah.
But, like, they didn't do any of that during the time where, like, people were pulling up their phones and videoing a show. So, like, for them, for NoFX playing a show, it's always just for the 1,000 people, whatever it is, in the room. Like, it's just for those people,
right?
And I
think it's shock value, but, I mean, that's part of being kind of in
of course
a band.
It is.
And, yeah.
Yeah. And that's just part of their shtick. That's how they got their career, like, you know, to what it is. That's part of it, I should say. I mean, they're incredible musicians, incredible songs, whole thing. I'm not just saying it's just shtick, but that's part of it.
Yeah.
And, like, that's the way I see it. Is they're playing for this room of people, and they say stuff. And I've been to 100 NoFX concerts, and they'll say something ridiculous, and you just go, ugh, and then you chuckle, and then they keep, and then you just forget, you know, move on.
Yeah.
So they're saying stuff like that and expecting the same thing they've been doing for 30 years.
But when there's like half the crowd has their phones out and in five minutes, TMZ is talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't mean to talk over you so much, but
no,
yeah,
it's fine, dude. It's a conversation.
So that's the thing. So when someone at a show is like filming it and putting it there, it's being put out to potentially 7 billion people that were never intended to be at that show.
Yeah.
So again, it's not just like, oh, it's okay because no one else heard it. It's just like if people had YouTube and cell phones from the start of this band, the way it works now, they wouldn't be as successful as they are because
they would have been gone a long time ago.
Yeah, of course. And it doesn't. I'll never defend what he said. It's insane.
It's indefensible, but that's the reason that I think it's almost ridiculous is because it is so indefensible that I'm sure it was just meant in jest, which still is not that cool.
Of course it was. No. But it's one of those things. Like, there are social cues, like, then there are things where it's like, hey, like, too soon, you know? Like,
definitely.
I mean, it's crazy now because we're living in a world where there's people that can formulate, like, smart opinions that were, and they were born after 9/11 happened. So,
that's
you know
true.
What I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, and people, I remember just watching that on TV when I was, when I was in school and, like, that whole thing. But the point I'm making here is, like, people now I hear like cracking jokes about it. And in my head, I'm like, wow, like, ooh. But to them, it's like not too soon. They might not have even been alive when it happened. That's making jokes about like JFK or something. Like, you see what I mean? It's like some like horrible thing, but it's so far removed. You can make a joke about like, I don't know, like someone in the 15th century dying and it'll be like, yeah, whatever. Like it's a joke. You used it as a fodder for a joke where the stuff that they use is still a really fresh wound. And I know my buddy, one of my best friends lives in Las Vegas. He was actually supposed to be working that event. He works.
I had a friend that was actually like a gaffer guy, like on the crew that was there too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and so when you know about this, that's where it like hits home. So there's more people that are personally tied to that event, that horrible scenario where they're going to be like, oh, like how dare you say that? Because I have been affected by it.
Definitely.
So not me. I'm saying like that. That's the person.
Yeah,
who,
definitely. Yeah.
So I totally understand the outlash for it. I think it's a bit much where it's like they're banned from performing in the United States for a band that does this stuff. So, you know, that's how I feel about the whole thing. It's 50%, 50%. Like, oh, that sucks. Shouldn't have said that. But also like, hey, there are NoFX.
Well, I can also, I'm kind of drawing a parallel to it. You know, growing up in the Midwest, kind of, you know, lower middle class, whatever you want to say, Roseanne was a big deal, that TV show.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always loved that show. And when it came back this last season, I really liked how they handled the politics and, like, you know, her sister was Democrat, she was Republican, and kind of the push and pull, but it was all in good fun. And when she did what she did with her tweet, I mean, here's what I feel. Yeah, it's horrible. What she said was, like, the worst thing in the world. But I love that show.
Yeah, she's the character. Like, that's the thing where it's like, yeah, this actress did this. She, I mean, I don't really know actually everything about that. From what I understand, she, like, was just being, like, a horrible racist.
There were some racist comments made that should not have been made. She blamed it on taking Ambien.
Yeah, yeah, and that's right, because I saw Ambien, like, tweet back, like, it's not one of our side effects. It's like, being racist is not a side effect of Ambien.
But my thing is, and I mean, this might not be a popular thing, and, like, I'm not trying to blow myself up here, but, like,
I get it.
If we knew every thought and every bad thing that all the artists that we like have done, there'd be no art to like.
Right.
Do you know, I mean, and I'm not defending what she said. I think it's horrible. Not. And I'm not defending what Fat Mike said. I think it's horrible. But right. That's not going to make me...
And I don't defend what, like, Archie Bunker says. You know what I mean? But that
definitely.
See what I mean? It's the same stuff. And it's like... it's. I think it's more like the world has matured, and it, whether for better or for worse, in some ways much better. In some ways, it's worse. So I get, like, there's this weird fine line between hypersensitive and really, like, fighting for what you believe in and what's right. Like... I think anyone that I'm going to associate, I think is going to agree that, like, racism is wrong and sucks. So, like, I feel like it's just common sense stuff, you know?
Well, and that's the thing. Like, if I say that I still want to watch Roseanne and someone says I'm racist, they're ridiculous. Like,
yeah, you're not racist for liking a show.
And if I want to go listen to The Decline when we get off the phone, that doesn't mean that I agree with what he said in Vegas. I just love that song. I love that record, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, that's what it is. I mean, I couldn't have said it better. Like, you don't have to feel bad about listening to NoFX now because Fat Mike said some insensitive comments. That's really the bottom line of the whole thing.
Well, I mean, and I'm sorry about the tangent, but like I said, this is a conversation, and I really wanted to know what you thought because I know how much you love them just like I do.
Yeah. So, it's like them and the Beastie Boys are pretty much my number one favorite band.
You know what? And the stuff that I've actually, the stuff you've written and the bands you've been in, I mean, maybe not like sonically, but I can see your influences. NoFX and the Beastie Boys together kind of makes sense. it's a compliment. Even like the things like the, and I mean, Patent Pending, which is the band you're in now, Pull the Pin back in the day. So, I mean, what was your first band that you ever started? Was it that band with your friends that you were just telling me about?
Yeah, with my brother and my buddy Ian. It was called, and we were kids at the time. We were little kids. And we started this band, and we called, the name of the band was Blunts. We didn't realize that was like a drug thing. We just named it that. Yeah, we named it after a blunt slide, like the skateboard trick. And because our buddy Ian was like really into skateboarding, and I like tried and always got hurt. But like, I actually stopped. I tried for a really brief amount of time and stopped because I was drumming. I was learning how to be a drummer.
Okay.
So I was like, I don't want to break my arms. You know what I mean? And never could even hardly do it. Anyway, yeah, that was the name of that first band. But we changed our name pretty quickly. It was called Shortwave Radio, which we thought was a neat name. And that we actually kind of went like. For being kids, you know, we were still in high school, but we were like going, we'd start touring like really like punk ass, like DIY tours, like fire halls and stuff like that. Some of the first shows that we did like out of state as that band were before they were big was with like Yellow Card and like, yeah, with, we used to play with Big Wig a lot. And
you guys were always in Pennsylvania, right? Like kind of, is that where you were at then?
Well, I was born in New York City, but then moved to Pennsylvania when I was like in like third grade or something.
Okay.
And but we would like, we took this band like around, like we went up into like New England, but I gotta remember we were children. I was like 14, 15, 16 years old doing this. We went up into like Boston, played up there, up into Vermont, like down into like, I think the farthest we ever played was like down somewhere south, like Virginia or down there or something. But like for kids, you know, we were trying to like get some, make it work. We were seeing how like other like punk bands are doing. Like we got really close with Big Wig from Jersey.
Yeah.
You know, Big Wig, you know, Tom, he's the best.
He's my buddy, dude. I love Tom.
Yeah. He's great. And he's an awesome songwriter and just an awesome band. They shred, man. And they're like what people could call like a pop punk band, but then they got like riffs and it's awesome.
I mean, you listen to songs like Flavor Ice and then you listen to like Mr. Asshole, like totally different, right?
But still sounds like the same band, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, they were a big part of like me doing the whole like into the punk rock thing was Big Wig, like really big part of that. And yeah, we were just, I mean, kind of just going for it. And then around that time is when I was like a little, it was like the end of high school. I was like a senior. And like my mom really hated that. She was always supportive, but then she kind of was like, are you not planning on like furthering your education? And, you know, like a classic parent discussion. It's like, yep. You know, when I look at it now, I'm an adult. It's like, she's just looking out for me. She's not doing it because she's like, I don't want you to not have fun, you know, the whole thing. So I was like, all right. I kind of like stopped doing that. My brother kept going with it. And I went to college. And while I was there, I was like, I didn't really like it all that much. I didn't hate it. I wasn't like, this place is terrible. I was just like, this doesn't really seem like it's for me. But I kept going. I did it. But I had to like, I wanted to keep playing music. So I just like kept doing it. I started writing some songs at school and started that my old band, Pull the Pin. And in doing that, we were just like, cool, like, let's just, we made some friends over the years and stuff, and we got to play like a couple dates on like the Warped Tour and stuff like that. We thought it was really cool. We just kept doing our thing and then playing and doing some more tours and like going out. No, we're really far. I don't think we toured any farther than like Florida. In like the Midwest, we go out there a bunch. And then you guys, when you were at the Ataris, you guys took us out, and you really like kind of took us under, and like you were like our like tour dad, like you took care of us. And like
Gavin talked a lot about that, because that's I just remember like you guys, I don't even know how it came about. I don't know if like your brother was booking, because your brother booked for us for a while.
Yeah.
I didn't know if like that's how the connection happened. I just, you know, Chris said, hey, we're going on tour with this band called Pull the Pin. You know, I'd never heard of you guys. And the first day we hook up with you guys, like I felt a kinship with you guys. You guys seemed like nice people. And some of the guys, I mean, I don't know how long it took to kind of be friends with everybody, but I know right off the bat, like you and me and Gavin, and I mean, we all kind of hung out and just talked, and it was really cool.
Yeah, it was great. And that was really great about, cause going into that tour, we were a little intimidated, cause we're like, we don't know these guys. Like, I had met Chris a couple times, like at the Warped Tour, when I was like, you know, I'm like, you know, I had Blue Skies Broken Heart as a kid, you know, like, so, and like him and my brother kind of knew each other, cause they did some, like they were working together. And then that's how my brother became their agent. And then I just kind of knew him through my brother almost. So
yeah,
I think Chris asked if my brother's band wanted to tour. And my brother was like, yeah, I don't really do that.
Well, your brother was in Split 50?
Split 50, yeah.
I remember because I think that tour that you were on, we may have played one show with them.
Yeah.
In like State College or somewhere?
State, at that place with the glass like walls or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It was called, what was it called? Like Sozo or something like that. I kind of remember. Weird, the stuff that sticks in your memory.
Well, and I just always thought it was weird too, because like wasn't Josh Bodwell in that band?
Yeah.
And oh, yeah. Josh went on to be on TV, and he's like a crazy tattoo artist.
Oh yeah, he lives. We live 5 minutes from each other now.
That's crazy. I want to get a tattoo from him so bad, but I know he's probably booked up.
We got like a 15-year waiting list.
That's crazy. You tell him if he like clears me some time, I'll come out there.
All right, I'll tell him. I'm sure he'll make it work.
I know, he's a good guy. But okay, so you're going on tour with us, the Ataris.
Yeah, yeah. And that was like, that was probably like a little more extensive for us, because I mean, when the Ataris would tour, it was always like, beat yourself into the ground and tour for a billion days straight.
It was brutal, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was like, for us, we're like, oh my God, getting into this thing. But it was really nice. Like you said, like that, we felt very welcome, especially by you from that first day. Chris is a weirdo, but you know,
we'll talk about that later.
Yeah. He was always, I mean, it's not that he wasn't nice, like to us. He was really nice to us. But he's like, you know, he's socially kind of like, all right, I'm going to go do my thing. And it was just a lot of fun. Like we pretty much spent most of the time with you and like Jake and Brian, and it was just a fun trip. Like we'd do our little sort of like voyages together and set up shop in town and hang out and do our stuff. And that tour was a whole lot of fun. That was like kind of, I think we toured with you guys twice in my event.
Well, we did. I mean, if my memory serves correctly, we did like 2 or 3 weeks. And then
you went to South Africa.
We went to South Africa and Europe and whatever. And then when we came back,
we met back up
in Jersey. And then we finished out like another 2 or 3 weeks. So, I mean, total, it was almost like a 2-month tour, I think.
Yeah, we just had a nice little break in the middle.
A little break in the middle, yeah.
So then, yeah. So from there, but that's how I kind of got more acquainted with everything. And that's how I'd end up really being eventually playing in the Ataris.
Yeah.
Three different times. But so like.
So how did you go like Pull the Pin? You guys had some success. Like how did you go from that to patent pending? Because when I saw you, I think last and we actually hung out was when you were with Pull the Pin touring with Patent Pending, and you guys came to my town, and I actually got to see you.
At Muncie, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, so we were Pull the Pin, and Pat and Penning were really close buddies. We would, like, not only did we tour together, sometimes we would, like, all pile in a van together. Like, we were that close, you know, physically and just as friends. And we all, between all of the members of Pull the Pin, we just collectively known Pat and Penning for, like, ever. Like, when their first out-of-state show ever back in, like, a billion years ago was in Pennsylvania, 5 minutes from where I live right now at someone's garage. Yeah, so it's like, you know, that's how we kind of got to know those guys, stayed in touch, did the touring together, and Pull the Pin just kind of dissolved. Like, for a band that was, like, doing the whole DIY thing and going out there and trying to do it and stuff, it's, you know what it's like. It's tough to stick to that and commit and make it work, and it's like, it's got to be a perfect storm, and it just wasn't hitting. Not that we expect to be some major monster hit band. It's just, it's tough. It gets very rough out there doing that. So we kind of just dissolved, you know, kind of went our separate ways for a little bit. And in that, like, right then is when Pat and Penning's singer left. He was like, he just wasn't really into that band. I mean, they were, like, literally his family, because his brother is the guitar player, who's now the singer, and just writes all the songs and all that. So while that was happening, he's like, Rob, just come play guitar with us. Like, he kind of was just like, I want to keep you busy, whether you stay in this or not. He was, like, just looking after me. He knew that I was, like, kind of bummed out from not doing the band thing anymore, because it's just tough. And he's like, yeah, come out with us. And they were doing all right, you know, for a smaller band. And first thing is, I went out with them to record this EP in Minneapolis with this dude, with this kid. He's younger than me at the time. You know, he's this, like, young guy who's, like, working with bands. And I was so impressed that he did a Motion City soundtrack record with Mark Hoppus. I was like, oh, you know Mark Hoppus from Blink. You know, I thought that was so cool. And he was like, yeah, you know, it's cool, man, whatever. And then, like, within a day, we all kind of, like, got that we have the same, because, you know, when you first meet somebody, you don't want to be too much of you.
Yeah, yeah.
By the end of the first day, we realized we're, like, the exact same person. His name's Jordan Schmidt. He's an incredibly wildly successful songwriter now. He's writing, like, Jason Aldean hits, and he's, like, part of the song team with Florida Georgia Line and stuff. So he's went on to do that. But he was a long time, like, pretty much sixth member of Pat and Penning, like, producing our records, helping write songs, like, being, like, a real big part of that. And we did a bunch of records with him, and I kind of stuck with Pat and Penning. And while I was doing that, I was, like, having some fun here and there. I was playing in this band of my buddies down in Georgia. They're called Freshman 15. They're just this fun sort of, like, it's like if All Time Low it wanted to sound like Strung Out. So, like, real technical stuff, but, yeah, like, that real poppy, polished sound. Both incredible bands. And they're really good. And the dude Davey is a really great voice, and he had this really cool band going. I thought it was really neat. So I did some touring with them, and then I was just with Pat and Penning, and then I kind of just stayed with Pat and Penning all along. My brother had a band going that kind of was very, very rock, like Foo Fighters-ish kind of thing.
Don't Panic, was that the name of the
band? Don't Panic, yeah. So he asked me, he liked the idea of how, like, Tom Petty ran his band. And this will make sense in a second, because he's like, I don't want to do that whole, like, this is the official roster, this is the band lineup. He's like, hey, I'm going to be writing songs and playing them and doing whatever sometimes. If you want to be a part of it, come do it. And if you don't have time for it, come some other time. He just wanted it to kind of be like musicians playing, which I thought was really neat. So it was cool for me to play, like, some different stuff with him. So I did a couple tours with him with the Ataris. We were touring together because Chris really liked Don't Panic and really liked my brother. And he's like, yeah, let's take your band out. So we did some touring. And then during that is when Aaron was the guitar player in the Ataris.
Aaron's my stepbrother, yeah.
Sure is.
I didn't know if you knew that or not.
No, I know. Yeah, of course. That guy is fantastic. and I love his paintings, by the way. They're awesome.
Oh, they're great, man. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to buy one. He has, like, wall paintings that he makes. It's unbelievable. But just seeing, like, this is for the listeners. I know you know this.
Yeah.
So.
His dad was just here yesterday having pizza at my house.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
Yeah, of course. So, yeah, he had just left the Ataris during that tour. There was, like, a split where they went to, like, Hawaii or something for a couple of days.
He left in Hawaii. There was some discrepancies that happened.
Yeah, so Chris calls me from Hawaii. He's like, Rob, he's like, can you learn all of our songs on guitar? He's like, you fell in cities. You're crazy. You'll figure this out. I was like, all right. I was like, when do we start back up again? He's like, it's in 4 days. And I was like, oh, my God, all right. So I learned, like, all 6,000 songs that he has in his set list.
Yep.
And it's kind of like, you know, that's the thing. I didn't want to, like, half-ass him. I wanted to do it right. I didn't want to just play, oh, this is the chord structure. You know, I wanted to do it. And having toured with them a bunch at that point, I was kind of like, yeah, I know they changed it up live and this and that. And the first show we did with no practice, it was at Diesel in Pittsburgh. And we met up there, And we did like this dry run, me and him with just two unplugged guitars in like the dressing room downstairs, ran through it. And he's like, all right, man. He's like, I feel confident. You got this. And you know how particular he is.
Yeah, definitely.
Every nuance, which is like, that's admirable. He's a great musician, you know, great songwriter. So we played the show. I was like, all right, like I felt comfortable enough. And we did this tour. I was pulling double duty on this tour for like 2 months or whatever it was.
So you were playing in Don't Panic, and then you were also playing in Atari's. Okay.
Yeah. So doing both bands. And then during that tour, Chris was like, do you want to just do this like full time with us? You want to just be the guitar player? I was like, yeah, sounds great. Like, count me in. So I did that. And I thought, that's really cool. Like, you know, I'm playing in a band that I listened to when I was younger. You know, not everyone does that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you were in the band.
I know, too. I was there, too, man. So, I was talking to Marco from Sugar Cult because he was the guitar, or he played bass back in the day. But I always had that idea, you know, all the ex-members of the Ataris, we should, like, if we made t-shirts that said I used to be in the Ataris, we could make a killing.
Well, we also have to. Just for each person to own one, we'd have to print like 15,000 of them.
Yeah, totally.
You gotta like, if you want to see like past members of the Ataris, you'd have to like open it up on an external drive.
Open up a spreadsheet. That's what we gotta do.
Yeah. No. So, I stuck with that on guitar for a little bit. Then they relocated to Arizona. I was doing packing all along, but I was missing some tours because, to be honest, like, I know it sounds crappy. It's a shitty thing to say, but it's true. And the patent pending guys were supportive of this. But I was getting, like, you know, money to do the Atari stuff. You know what I mean? And it was, like, kind of splitting me. It was keeping me going. And patent pending was doing here and there. Like, we were doing, you know, well. But it was, like, it was almost like, hey, guys, I can't make this tour. I got to go to work.
Oh, I got you. Know what I mean? Yeah.
But that's what I was doing with the Ataris. Not that it was only work. I had a lot of fun. But that's how that worked. But then Chris was, like, we're moving to Arizona. You could either come with us. Or I was, like, nah, I'm not going to do that. I was, like, I'm going to stay here. But thanks. You know, it's been fun. Like, if you ever need someone to fill in, hit me up. He's like, yeah, and it was just fine. You know, that's how it went. Stuck with patent pending. Then we did some really crazy things, and we won like that Billboard Music Award, which was bizarre, and played that award show and stuff.
Tell me a little bit about that. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, like the real, like the way it's kind of like a fluke, but it's not. I guess like the way I understand it, this could be completely wrong, but like Chevrolet was the sponsor for the Billboard Music Awards that year.
Okay.
And they wanted to do some, like, they had a fun marketing idea. They're like, let's get a couple of bands from around the country. Like, this is what it looks like to commercial watchers and people that just hear about this. Like, Chevy is pairing up with Billboard to, like, find, like, that unsigned band out there and, like, give them a shot to play, you know, to, like, play in front of a big audience kind of thing. What it really was is they wanted to find a band that actually had their own following already. So, like, they put it out to like a bunch of bands, and like patent pending was at the time just a band that just like, especially then really would just go like hit the road, do it, just get out there and like just try everything we can to just get people to like pay attention and have fun doing it, you know? And we got like selected from this thing. I think my brother actually helped us out with it because someone we went to high school with was like working with Billboard or something. It's really bizarre, but it was like Chevy Cruz, like battle of the bands, like to Vegas kind of thing. And they send you, they put us like in this car with like a camera crew and like to drive out to Vegas and like film stuff along the way. It was really neat. And then we get there and play the show at like the Hard Rock. And it was like the judges like selected a winner to play on the Billboard Music Awards, but it was like, you're winning an award. It's an actual Billboard award. That was like, what's it called? Like the Dream Seeker Artist of the Year or something like that. And they're like, you'll be mentored by Tayo Cruz, you know, the Dynamite guy.
Yeah.
You want to know how much mentoring he did? Is I met him by accident in an elevator, and he said one word to me.
What was the word?
Hi. So awesome. Nice enough fella. He was smiling at least. But anyway, we did that. It was just bizarre because that was a crazy day. I mean, we're in Vegas playing in the MGM Grand Arena, televised in front of 8 million viewers or whatever. I met Stevie Wonder. I met, you know, like Justin Bieber and Katy Perry and all these like freaking top A-list celebrities. I met Taylor Swift. We were sitting next to Linkin Park. That's where they had us seated.
Wow.
It's really nice. Yeah, they were really, really friendly guys. They were kind of like, they knew that we were like the band that just like got there by accident. So they were trying to make us feel like comfortable from what I remember. They're just like palling around and, you know, being nice. It was funny. Actually, we saw someone we knew there. We had like an anchor. Do you know Tucker? He used to play drums on Thursday.
Oh, yeah. Tucker's been on the show already. Yeah, Tucker's a buddy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Great. So Joe's cousin is in Thursday. It's Steven Padula. I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, I know Steven too, yeah.
Yeah, that's Joe's cousin. So they were obviously close with Thursday all along, and Tucker there was like, Tucker, what the hell are you doing here? And he was playing drums for that The with Wanted.
The Wanted, yeah. We talked about that on the podcast. After we get done, you should go listen to his episode. It's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. So it was just cool, like, kind of seeing people we knew, and then all these, like insane A-list celebrities. Like, we met Whoopi Goldberg and, like, all that stuff. It was a bizarre thing. And then around that time is, I think, now we've been touring with Bowling for Soup already at that time. We kind of became really close friends with them. And, yeah, because that was, like, right from one thing to the other. Oh, yeah. That's when I was, like, really stupid with the amount of touring I was doing. Because I did, like, we did a tour with the Ataris. And this is when I was asked to play drums for the Ataris, because Jake had left during a tour after I wasn't the guitar player anymore. This is insane how, like, involved all this gets. And
it's a great story for the podcast. People want to know this stuff, man.
All right, here we go. So, yeah, Jake, who was a drummer from the Ataris when I was a guitar player, then they moved to Arizona. He didn't like it, I guess, or whatever it was. He ended up leaving. And then while they were in the middle of a tour or something, or starting it, Brian calls me at like 8 a.m. one day. He's like, hey, can you fly out to Philly in like 2 days to play drums for us? What are you doing? I was like, we go on tour in 2 months with Bowling for Soup. He's like, what day? And at the end of the Atari tour is the first day of the Bowling for Soup tour. I'm like, I'll make it work. Bring me out. So I had to learn all the songs. Like, I was tapping on like a tray table in a plane, like to drumming out the songs. You know what I mean? Like, that's, I did it down to Asheville, North Carolina. That's where the first show was. And, that was fun, like just jumping behind and playing drums again, because that's how I started. So it was really fun to get back into that. And I knew the songs from playing guitar, which is neat. So kind of did that, drummed through it, did a 2 month tour with the Queers. So it was the Ataris and the Queers, right into literally, like, I flew back into New York to start a tour with Bowling for Soup with Patent Pending, playing guitar. And then we went straight from that to this Vegas trip. So that was like a bizarre, like, 3-4 months or whatever it was, ending that trip with playing the Billboard Music Awards. Then I kind of got home. I was like, wow, I have to unwind from this. That was like a big thing. Like, starting from playing a tiny little club in Asheville, North Carolina, to playing MGM Grand Arena while like Stevie Wonder is watching you. It was like quite a turnaround in like 3.5 months.
Yeah.
So that was fun. And we just kind of kept going that year. That same year is when we started. Oh, right. So that's the year that I left the Ataris.
Let's talk about that. It's kind of infamous, you know, you were playing drums with the Ataris. I have a little bit of a story. I want to hear it in your words. Then I'll tell you a little bit of what happened to me. We got into it on Gavin's episode, but it's pretty funny. So I want to give me your side of it. And I know you and Chris are cool now and, you know, like
we're
all friends. There's no shit talking. So just give me your side of the events that took place. I mean, everybody out there knows when you're on tour for a long period of time, you're living in a van together or a bus together or whatever, things can get kind of sketchy.
Yeah, and to be completely honest, it wasn't like, it's not like there was some huge like pent up contention. I really think it's probably one of those things where there's like 100 little factors. While doing this tour at the Ataris, I like couldn't commit to the last show because it was the day we were supposed to practice before flying out for. With Patent Pending, at the end of this, we were going over to the United Kingdom with Bowling for Soup. This was going to be our first overseas tour ever with a band that is like, they do really well over there. They do great over here, but over there, they're like, they're huge. So that was a big deal for us. I was like, we don't want to mess this up. So we're going to practice before this tour, which we usually don't. So, and I was like, Chris is like, not giving me a hard time about that, missing this last show, but I committed to do the Ataris tour and told him right away that I can't do this like Rhode Island show or something. But he was like, yeah, maybe I'll do an acoustic, whatever. We're getting closer to that. And I remember we had like, it wasn't a fight. Me and him never argued. And it was just kind of this like more aggressive, for lack of a better term, discussion between the two of us that lasted 3 minutes outside of some venue in Ohio or something. And he was just like, man, he's like, come on. He's like, I need you for this. And I was like, I don't think I can do it. And he's like kind of irritable, but he was fine. And then we get to the show in Jersey. This is why I'm saying there's a lot of factors. I don't think it was just one thing, regardless of what TMZ says or anything says or even what he says. So, we do this thing. We're at this last show. It was in Asbury Park at the Lanes, which I think is closed and reopened or something, which that place is great. Awesome staff. I really, really like those people. And my buddy Josh came out and Corey came out. You know Corey and Gavin came out and it was just, I had a bunch of friends coming to the show. And I think whether we were acting contentious with each other or not, like it was towards the end of a tour, and that's when you're kind of just like, all right, like let's get this. Let's
you're just
let's
ready get to get done and get out. Yeah.
Yeah, especially like, you know, grinding out a little bit. So, we're playing the show. My buddy Josh, and I'm not blaming this on him. I'm the one that was doing this, but he's like, come on, Robin, don't hang anywhere. Drink this with me. I was like, all right, we're sitting at this bar. And I'm just drinking all these. I don't drink vodka. You know what I mean? If I'm ever drinking, I'm like a beer drinker. You know, yeah. Like hanging out, drink beer kind of guy thing. If I'm doing that. So I'm just like having fun with my friend that I hadn't seen in a couple of years. And he's like, fuck you this, fuck you that. I was like, all right. Before I knew it, I was like, oh my God. I was like, I'm a little drunk. I was like, all right, time to play the show. So I get up there and I was like, I remember in my head, I'm like, all right, like I'm making this work. I'm playing it. I'm like cutting a fill here or there, but like I'm keeping on time for the most part. I'm sure it wasn't the greatest performance. I'm not here to lie and make myself sound better. But this is how it played out for me. And this is also 6 years ago, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I just remember during one of the songs, Chris turns around and he like takes his guitar and like kind of jams it into the drum set. And I thought, because you know, during a set sometimes he gets a little rowdy,
yeah,
but he's like,
yeah.
Like it's like real into it. And I was like, oh, cool. Like he's getting down. I was like, let's fucking do this. Like, it'll be fun. And then he like was like yelling while he's doing it. And I was like, oh man. And like, well, then he like kind of like knocked over something. I was like, all right, I'm getting up. And I just stood up and walked away. And he had a little temper tantrum and threw stuff around. I guess he was just like irritated just in general. I guess he's, like I said before, he's very particular about stuff and you can't blame him for that. It's his band. You know, he wants it to sound a certain way.
Yeah.
And I would give him the best performance I could have. And I'll even give him some credit. Before we went up, he was like, hey Rob, he's like, I saw that your buddy was like getting you all sorts of, and my buddy Josh tried to apologizing for this. I'm like, no, it's not your fault. Shut up. But Chris was like, I saw your buddy looking y'all trash. He's like, are you sure you can do this? Like, he was trying to give me an out. He was like, I'll play acoustic if I have to. He wasn't even being a dick. And I was like, no. I was like, you'll be fine. I was like, I got this. And I guess it's just like whatever it was. Like, he did. I don't know. I wasn't inside of his head. I have no idea.
Yeah.
It could have sounded like the worst show ever. To people in the audience, it could have sounded like the worst show ever. But I remember Gavin saying, like, hey, that's pretty good. Like, you did it. But yeah, then I left. I didn't drive, of course not. But Corey was there because he was bringing me to Long Island so Pat and Pending could rehearse to fly out to England. So we get to Long Island. I go to sleep at my buddy Anthony's house, our drummer. And I wake up the next morning, and Anthony's brother-in-law and sister were visiting. So they're in the kitchen eating breakfast. And I wake up, I'm going there. And Anthony's there. He's like, yeah. He's like, all right, let's eat. He made breakfast, and we're just hanging out. And Anthony's brother-in-law, he goes, hey, did you guys see this thing that happened with the drummer in the Ataris? And I started laughing. So I thought he was just messing with me. And he goes, no. He's like, did you see this? And he like shows like, you heard about this guy? I was like, are you kidding me right now? He's like, what? I was like, that's me. He's like, what are you talking about? I was like, that's me. This is on the news? He's like, that was you? Are you kidding me? And shows me like this TMZ article. I was like, this is on TMZ? Like, this is not a big thing. This is me and Chris, just like, whatever. I thought it was going to be the end of it that night. I didn't know that was going to be a whole thing, like the way it was. Then my phone's blowing up. All these people are texting me. Like, it was like most of it was like, fuck that guy, that piece of shit. I was having the older lineup of the Ataris was messaging me on Facebook. So Chris Knapp, Mike Davenport, and John Collera, who was like, he was like the most involved in like talking to me. He's like, oh my God. He's like, this is crazy. He's like, he was like, we got your back. We know what Chris is like, you know, there again, like, yeah. But they were kind of being like a little funny about it. Cause I guess all those dudes have patched up any differences they've had because they did a tour since then.
Yeah, they did like the anniversary tour or whatever with the original lineup.
Yeah. Well, I just had like a bunch of people reach out that I wouldn't have thought would reach out to me to be like, man, like, don't take that shit, you know, fuck that kind of thing. Like from people that I look up to, musicians, yeah. I was like, that makes me feel all right. And it made me feel like it's okay to make mistakes and it's okay to fuck up. And it's like, I shouldn't have, but I did and whatever it was. I didn't realize it was as big of a deal as it was. And then a week later, we're in England playing this really great tour and I kind of forgot about it. You know what I mean? And then coming up here and there and I sort of take it in stride now. But we've since made up, me and Chris, we hugged and, I forgave him, he forgave me. You know, that's it.
Well, and that's a good way to be. And that's the only reason I wanted to bring it up. I'm not trying to get a scoop or anything, you know. I just
care. I tell people to ask me about it.
Well, I know, but like we've all toured together. We're all buddies. And like I know that, you know, there were some times back in the day where Chris and I didn't get along that well.
Yeah.
And I mean,
It's just people. It's just humans. Like, you're not programmed to just always get along nonstop.
People don't understand, too, that when you're in a band, it's like you're married to three or four other guys. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard work to make it happen, and people get in fights, and people get pissed off, and they do things that are maybe not in the best interest of the band. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, but indirectly, when all that happened, the next day my phone blew up. Because people are stupid and didn't realize that I spell my name with a C-H and not a K.
Oh, because you're Chris.
Yeah. So I have people texting me and emailing me and calling me, telling me how much of a prick I am.
Oh, man.
And
sorry.
I'm like, I have not been in the band for 3-4 years. So, but I'm just glad that everybody's cool again and we're all friends. And
Yeah. I mean, it was one of those things where actually I actually could tell you how we patched it up. It's because Brian texted me after all this because, like, it's not like I was like, oh, hey, Brian, no, we just didn't talk anymore after that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't like, it's just because I'm sure both of us just felt a little awkward. You know what I mean? Like, that's the first thing. So it must have been, I think maybe like 2 years later or something. And Brian texts me. He goes, hey, he's like, I don't know if you care or not. Because, you know, Brian is a good dude.
Yeah,
he's
we played Little League together. I've known Brian my entire
life. Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, you know, see, he's just, you know what he's like. He's polite. He's great. He's
best nice guy in the world, man.
Yeah, so he texts me. He goes, hey, I don't know if you care or if you wanted to know or not. He's like, but Chris's dad just passed away. And I met him like once or twice. And I was like, oh, my God. I was like, that sucks. And I was like,
his dad was a really, really great guy, man.
Yeah, and he's a huge supporter of Chris doing
huge.
The Atari.
I don't think I ever saw him without an Atari's hat or shirt on the whole time.
Yeah, from what I know from Chris, like, that's the reason he was, because he had, like, you know, such, like, good support. It's like the reason he was able to, like, really do it, you know? I was like, ah, shit. You know, I thought about it for a second, and I was like, I'm going to text him. I texted Chris, and I was like, this isn't about anything that happened in Jersey. I was like, I don't care about that right now. I was like, I just wanted to send condolences. That really sucks. Because I had just lost someone in my family, like, not that long before that. So it's like, I was sort of very sympathetic, you know? So it's like, I just know how it sucks. And he got right back to me. He goes, and he started to go into this apology about the whole drum thing. And I was like, no. I was like, that's not what we're talking about right now. I was like, go with your family, do your thing, worry about that right now. I was like, if you ever want to talk about that some other time, let me know. And he was like, all right. He's like, you know, I really appreciate you reaching out. I was like, yeah. I was like, I'm not doing this I'm not trying to do this just to be the better man. I was like, I'm doing this because I think this is the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just what I felt. I'm not perfect. I've done plenty of stupid things, but I try the best I can to be the best I can.
Yeah.
I just thought that was, like, proper form to do. And then we played a festival together in England. And
was it the Slam Dunk? Is that what that was?
Was it? No, it was actually a different one. We did Slam Dunk, but it was a different time. This one was called Hit the Deck.
Oh, okay, I remember seeing that.
Yeah, that was really cool. I think that one, Hit the Deck is 2 days and Slam Dunk's 3 days. At least it was then. And we're there and like, we kind of just see each other from a distance and, like, start walking towards each other. And it was a hug. And then we got, like, food together and just kind of, like, bullshitted. And he was like, I'm sorry about all that, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, yeah. I was like, sorry, I fucked up the show. He's like, oh, stop. That was it. You know, and that was the end of that. And just from there on out, because I even... probably another year or two after that, they were doing, my brother was booking for Screeching Weasel and, he was also booking for the Ataris and, so he put them together and the Ataris didn't have a bass player. And Chris was like, hey, would you want to do these? It was like four shows. You want to do these like four Weasel shows with us? Yeah. All right. Why not? He's like, yeah, we'll fly you out to Chicago. I was like, I love Screeching Weasel. He's like,
so we'll you've been Chicago. Everything in that band except him.
Except Chris. Yeah. So he's like, yeah. I was like, I got a bass. Yeah, great. It sounds great. I'll learn the songs. I went out. We did like this dry run in like a hotel room, you know, went and played the shows and it was great. And actually Bowling for Soup was the direct support on those shows. Because my brother was asking me, he's like, hey, do we know, he's like, do you know anyone in this range that like would do these shows? They're looking for like a strong support. And I was like, I don't know if it would make sense, like, but it might, because they're both kind of like the, you know, like gimmicky, like tongue in cheek, but great songs, you know, kind of like band, you know, like Bowling for Soup and Screeching Weasel are different, but very similar.
Yeah.
You know, three chord punk rock songs. One's just a little bit faster than the other.
Yeah.
That's really all it is. Jared's like a huge, huge Screeching Weasel fan. Like he's got a tattoo, at, you know, like, so they were like, fuck yeah, let's do it. And they were on it. So I was like, all right. Even better now because I've got some other really close friends that I won't feel not that me and Chris weren't fine, but it's like, you know, traveling with him, it's just a little different than traveling with other people.
Yeah.
just because, you know, he's quirky. I'm not afraid to say that.
He never let any of us drive.
Yeah, oh, God. And he's not the best driver in the world.
No, not when he's making an iTunes playlist on his MacBook while he's driving through Arizona.
Like, in code. So we were doing that, and I was like, sure. I was like, I'll be at those shows. He's like, that's it. We're stealing you. They, like, took me on their bus for those shows because he's like, we want Rob time. I was like, all right, great. So that was a lot of fun, and that was, like, cool. It was like, I felt diversified. I'm like, now I've played bass, you know, for some real shows. And that was a lot of fun. And then last summer on the Warped Tour, Bowling for Soup was on it, and they were booked to do this whole thing. And Gary, the drummer, had a baby on the way. And I guess she was coming a little earlier than expected. They had, like, a break. They did a week, then a couple days off, then a week. And during those few days off or whatever it was, him and his wife had a check with the doctor. And the doctor's like, hey, Gary, I wouldn't go anywhere if I were you. Like, this baby is on the way, like, any day now. And the shows were pretty close. The shows were, for them anyway, there were, like, three Texas shows and one, like, Kansas City show or something. It was, and one other thing. I don't know. It was, like, four or five shows. So Jarrett's like, I used to do this thing with Bowling for Soup where I'd, like, sit in for, like, the second half of a song. Like, we'd switch.
Yeah.
And I'd jump in and, like, play the drums on it because it was fun. And, like, Gary thought it was silly the one day. So Jarrett's like, yeah, we toured like 100 times. So he's like, you toured us enough. You know how we do it live. Do you want to just do this? It'd be fun to have you. I was like, all right, like, I can do those shows. Why not? So they brought me out to Texas. I jumped on, I got to do the Warped Tour, which I'd done a million times before, but this was the first time I did the Warped Tour, like, on the main stage with, like,
it's way different. I've played every stage on that tour. And when we finally on the main stage, like, it's night and day next to the other stages, man.
Yeah. I mean, I've done that tour every single way you could do it, for the smallest, like, peon. And I mean, the Warped Tour treats everybody equal, but you know what I mean? Like, the smallest, like, you feel in the way, tiny little band to playing on a main stage band. Like, only obligation was to just walk to the stage, play drums, and walk away. Like,
it was great. You know,
yeah, it was fantastic. I got to shower. I got to eat. I got a bed to sleep in. It was awesome.
Yep.
You know. So that was a lot of fun doing that, and I just love those guys. Like, they've been great to our band, to Pat and Penning, for so many years, and they're just fun dudes. That's really that. So that's kind of a long-winded, comprehensive, like, story of how I started playing music and where.
we just kept going. It's great, man. So what have you got, like, coming up next? I mean, is Pat and Penning have a new record coming out? Are you guys touring? What are your plans for this summer? Like, we're getting pretty close to an hour, so, I mean, we can start just kind of talking about, like, the present.
Yeah, yeah. Pat and Penning's doing, like, working on a new record. And I mean, the way that usually starts, Joe is the primary songwriter. It's not like he's the heart and soul of the band or anything. Everyone's a piece of it, you know, but he kind of, like, starts that process, songwriting and getting it going and stuff. So he's kind of working in a studio right now to get a record going. I know he wants to put one out. I don't know when. We don't really know if we discussed the timeline or anything like that.
Are you guys going to self-release, or are you stuck in any labels? Or
I don't know, actually. I know that we prefer doing it with a label, just because it takes less pressure off and less you have to worry about right away.
Yeah.
So it'd be nice that you get more distribution and the whole thing. So I don't really know what the plan is. We want a finished product to, like, bring to someone to distribute, you know? Like, we don't want to just be like, hey, fund this and whatever. We'd rather just, like, we're going to get this done and shop a finished product and see if anyone likes it. Cause, I mean, we've been on and off of numerous labels. That's just how it works now. It's not the old, you know, 80s and 90s model of you sign to RCA Records and then, like, you put out 19 albums and then you're done with your band. You know, now it's like there's a lot more freedom. It's like, you can record an album in your garage and it'll sound incredible, and you find someone to put it out. You know what I mean? It's, you do singles, you do this, you do that. It's neat. It's fun how versatile it's become, because it gives a lot of more people are listening now because more people can. I'm not saying to us, I'm saying in general, you don't need a CD player, and you don't need a way to get to the record store anymore. You know what I mean? It's everywhere. It's on the same thing that you call your parents on. That's where you buy your music. So.
When I was kind of bummed. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they're saying that, well, at least this guy, this was his idea. He said that, you know, the way things are going within the next 5 to 10 years, or even less than that, everything is just going to be streaming format. You won't have, like, I mean, I know MP3s aren't physical, but I mean, when you buy an MP3 or when you download an MP3, it's on your phone, it's on your computer.
Now it's all cloud storage, and
it's all going to be cloud, and you're just going to basically do these like streaming services, which I like. As an audio guy, though, like, I do feel like there's a lot. I mean, you lose audio quality in compressing it to an MP3. So I imagine when you stream it, you lose a lot more. So
yeah, and that's the thing. Like, most people don't know why what they're hearing sounds any different.
Yeah,
people that aren't audio engineers. I'm not an audio engineer. I don't know what it is. I just know it's the most I know. It's like your ears can hear between some hertz and some megahertz, and digital format only really captures like a little middle section of it or something. I don't know if that makes sense. I don't know if what I said is right. I have no idea.
I mean, it's you're on the right track.
Good enough. All right, I'll take it.
So, what have you got going on this summer? I mean, any tour plans? I mean, are you doing anything with patent pending?
Patent Pending's not really doing a tour. We're doing a festival. It's like a one-off festival. It's actually in Pittsburgh. It's run by this really awesome dude named Rishi. You might have even met him before, because he's this gigantic, tall dude from Pittsburgh. Plays in a band called Eternal Boy, and he's very much like he's one of the last people. He's like the fucking scene, you know? Like, he does like the pop punk thing. Like, from he's really like he loves the. It's not really what I'm completely into, but he loves like the Drive Through Records phase, like that, you know, the early 2000s, like pop punk stuff. And he's very, very passionate about it. Like, it really is. It's impressive how much this dude loves. So and he's just one of the most genuinely nice people in the world. We actually brought them over. Their band Eternal Boy does really well in like Asia or something. And we brought them to England once, because we were like, man, like, this stuff hits over there like pretty good. And like, we really think a lot of people are going to like it. And we do, you know, for us, we do great over there. So we brought them over, and people loved them and stuff. But I'm digressing a little bit. He runs a festival called the Four Core Music Festival. I think this year it's like Less Than Jake and Anti-Flag and Bayside and a bunch of other really great bands, and their bands playing it. And we have us on that too. So we're doing that. It's in, I think it's August or something. I don't remember the date, but it doesn't matter. We're doing that. That's really all we have scheduled right now, because I think the focus is that album.
Okay.
And then I imagine we'll probably, when that comes out, we'll want a tour on that, you know?
Great.
And what I do at home is I do a concert marketing for a promoter around here. And I mean, we do everything from like, I think we have like, you know, Earth, Wind & Fire and Styx, and like, but then we get like bands that I like. We've had like Rise Against and Social Distortion and stuff. And then we do, it's great. It's a venue down in Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. It's called the Sherman Theater. And it's a really neat place. Great people. I like doing it. It keeps me busy. It keeps me like sharp. You know what I mean? Because if I just somehow just played music, I feel like I wouldn't be like staying focused on like what I got an education for. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you just want to stay sharp, I think. And also, you got to make money too. So it's
definitely.
You know, that's part of how it is. So I've had some offers to do some tours this summer, whether I take them or not. You know, I'd like to. We'll see if it works out or something. But I might be doing some touring this summer. I might not. Either way, I'm going to be staying pretty busy and then kind of just take it from there. I like playing music, and I like hanging out with my friends. So when I get to do two of those together, it's great.
Well, I tell you, man, it's been wonderful kind of reconnecting with you and just kind of hearing your story. Because, I mean, we toured together. We've known each other for a while, but, I mean, it was kind of condensed into those, like, 2 months where we actually got to hang out and do things.
Every day together?
Yeah, it's been great, and I would love to have you back on in the future. Maybe if you're going to do some stuff, like when the new record comes out, come back on and talk about the new record.
Yeah.
I always play a song. So,
okay.
I think I want to play a patent pending song, because that's your current kind of your thing you're doing, right?
Yeah.
Now, why don't you let me know the song you think I should play? Like, what's the song that's going to let everybody know what you guys are all about?
I think that for a couple of reasons, I'd select this song. It's called Hey Mario. And I think like the content says a lot about like what our band's like. We don't take things too seriously. Because most of the time, and we do touch on like serious subjects sometimes, because mostly, I mean, our general message a lot of the times is like, just be yourself. Don't let people shit on you. love life and kind of like, you know, don't let shit get you down, even when it seems like it's going to. It's a tough message to speak because, I mean, we all struggle with that too. So it's like to be able to put that message out and get people involved in it just kind of helps you out a little bit. But either way, the song is a sillier song, but I think shows our don't take life too seriously kind of thing. And it's about the Mario Brothers. It's like a joke that Joe told on stage in like Scotland where he's like, I need to make this a song because not enough people laughed at my joke about how like the princess always ignores him and stuff. And he's always risking his life and everything. So, and it's actually a song that like strayed us a little bit from like a sound that the band was doing forever. We kind of experimented with stuff we never did. It's nothing crazy. It's not like we're the Beatles like doing making Sgt. Pepper or something, but it was like, for us, it was like, hey, cool. Like, production in a different way, and the song's really neat, and it actually stemmed from like this like chord structure I was putting together, so I was more involved in that process with that song than most others, and I just like the song. I think it's neat. I think you'll like it.
Cool. Well, hey, I want to thank you again. This has been great. I'm gonna, you know, when we get off the phone here, I'll play Hey Mario on the podcast. Everybody can check it out. But
all right.
I really appreciate it, man. And I can't wait to have you back on. We'll talk about the new record and everything else. So tell your brother I said what's up. Tell Corey and everybody I said hello.
You got it.
And I'll talk to you soon, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah. It was nice chatting with you. We'll talk soon.
Talk to you later, man. Thank you.
Later, buddy.
And there it was, my conversation with my good friend, Rob Felicetti from Patent Pending. Had a really good time speaking with Rob. You know, we got pretty deep on some things. You know, I hope nobody's feelings were hurt. You know, I was talking about some of the crazy stuff that's happened when he was playing in the Ataris and whatnot. Everything is water under the bridge. We're all cool now. Chris Rowe, I love you. Rob, I love you. Everybody, I love you guys. We also, you know, we talked about Patent Pending and how great they've done in the past. And I cannot wait for this new record to come out. I think it's going to be really, really good. So when that comes out, we're going to have Rob back on the show so we can talk about that new record. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun. So next week, we do have a new episode coming out. I've got a couple people lined up right now. We'll see how the schedules come out, but it's going to be a good episode because all the guests I have lined up are really, really good. So keep checking out Instagram and Facebook and everything to make sure that you're up to date on what's going on with the podcast. It's TOTOT Podcast on all the social medias. Make sure you leave us a review and subscribe on iTunes. And I just want to say thank you guys very much for checking this out because the podcast has been growing exponentially. We've now been listened to in over 50 countries and in all 50 states. The only continent that we have not been listened to on is Antarctica. So if you know a scientist in Antarctica, hit him up and tell him to check it out because then I'll have all 7 continents. And I'm kind of a geography geek, so I want to get Antarctica. So if you know somebody that's stationed there, you know, doing science experiments, tell them to at least play the episode and then just not even listen. I just want to get that last continent. So I hope you guys are having a wonderful week. Thank you so much for letting me into your life. You know, things have been going well on my side. I'm in the new house with my wife and my 2 kids, and things are going great. I've been working a lot and, you know, just doing the podcast, trying to set things up for you. So I'm going to play the song that Rob suggested that we play. It's a song called Hey Mario. It's by Patent Pending, and it's pretty cool. I think you guys are really going to like it. If you played a lot of Nintendo back in the day, I think it's going to be right up your alley. So we'll see you next week. Go back and check out a past episode. We've got some great guests like Franz Stahl. He played in the Foo Fighters and in the band Scream. Kira Rossler, she was in Black Flag. Tucker from the band Thursday, Eddie from Taking Back Sunday. We've got so many cool guests in the back catalog. So go back and check out one of the old episodes. Tell a friend, spread the word, help me grow this thing. It's a lot of fun. And the more people we have in our little club, the better it's going to be. So here it is. I'm going to leave you with Hey Mario from the band Patent Pending, Rob's band. And I'll see you guys next week. Thanks a lot.
Lives. just let her go. Go Mario, you're an next level bro, and she's a jump too short when the clock is running low. Hey Mario, get your shit together. Hey Mario, or you'll chase this bitch forever. Warp zone, friend zone, high score, no more. Stalking this chick in a Koopa Troopa town. Live life easy like Luigi.
And never let a hoe get him down.
Let Koopa keep a bow, grab a flower and go. We'll jump the flagpole and light up the night. Hit Rainbow Road with toy spinning them tires.
And spitting hot fire.
Mario, get your shit together, bro. You got to know this princess isn't worth these extra lives. Just let her go, go Mario. You're an next level bro, but the Peach been cheating and you know I ain't talking code. You're a plumber, a doctor, a race car driver, an athlete, a spaceman, a super smash survivor. You got coins like Matt, get a bachelor pad, and Coco Beach, where the honey's at. Yeah, get up, get off the floor. She's not the one worth dying for.
One Hit Thunder is a podcast where we both celebrate and have a good laugh about bands and artists that had just one hit that we all know. Each week, we're joined by a guest from the world of music or comedy to learn more than you ever thought you would about some songs that you can't forget, and we decide if they brought the One Hit Thunder or were nothing more than a one hit blunder. Look, if you listen to the show, you're probably going to laugh, and I guarantee you're going to crush next time the bar has music trivia. Tag Team, Jane Child, Meredith Brooks, Looking Glass, Sean Mullins, Eiffel 65, EMF, Crash Test Dummies, Crazy Town, Chumbawamba. We have hundreds of episodes in our back catalog and a new episode each week, so pass the Dutchie, make sure you're connected, and subscribe to One Hit Thunder wherever you get your pods.